Bruno's here representing Workshop Brewing Company, and I did promise we had a lot of election interviews over the last 3 weeks, and I did promise there'd be no election interviews today. And I could actually talk election issues with Bruno. He's just was previously involved with the regional council, but left to work somewhere where he felt like you could make a difference.
Yeah,
that kind of sum it up.
Yeah, pretty much. Where I guess I got more control over the outcomes in terms of, you know, sustainability and doing the things that I think are right.
Yeah. So what's Workshop Brewing doing?
Well,
that's different. So many things.
Where do I start?
Yeah.
I guess pretty much from day one, a lot of our philosophy. So there's three of us involved there. So there's Matt Williams and Jake Gibbs. So there's three of us, and it was a dream that Matt had with Jake back in Tofino when they were sitting around, that Raglan needed a little craft brewery.
Right.
And so it's all started there. And when I met Matt and Jake, I was sort of really just helping them out, doing a bit of brewing. And I never really intended to do this as a full-time job.
Right.
Really from day one, we set about building our own brewery, essentially, rather than buying, you know, a brewery in from somewhere. And so everything about our space embodies a lot of the energy and effort that we've put in over 5 years. So everything's very custom built in there next door. And so using a lot of local labour around here. And that transfers right through to a lot of the ingredients and things that we're often using in our beers. And now increasingly expanding our range of things. We're playing around with a lot of things like kombuchas at the moment, which I'm really quite excited about. So
they're really hitting the shelves in cafes and places like that, aren't they?
Yeah. I've always been interested in it because it's, probably a lot of people know already, but you know, kombucha is a symbiotic culture of bacteria and yeast, which is what SCOBY stands for. And
oh, is that right? I didn't even realize.
So the SCOBY, that funny looking disc of a thing.
Yeah, that's it's pretty funny looking.
Yeah, it's pretty. It looks like a brain in a bottle, Olin told me.
Yep, I see it.
Little tendrils coming down. I'm fascinated by that because whilst there's some yeast in there and there's also some bacteria in there, you do get a little bit of fermentation from the yeast in there, but it's not to the extent that it turns it into a heavy alcoholic beverage. You know, it might get to 1 to, you know, maybe at most 3% ABV if you get a heavy fermentation. But it has this really nice little tart kind of flavour, and it's got this beautiful platform that can be a perfect base for just about any flavours that you want to dream up. Mm. And, you know, seasonally, I like the idea of, you know, at the moment there's lots of citrus around still, there's limes, there's orange, and you can take the skins off of those, you can use the juice off of those. And, you know, they're falling off trees everywhere around here, they're falling around in my yard as well. I can put the same orange skins in beer, like in a wheat beer, for example, as I can into a kombucha, or I could even, you know, maybe make a distillate out of that and, you know, make an orange cello, if you like, or a limoncello from the same types of fruits. So, and then as you come into, you know, spring, like now, citrus start to dissipate away and things like loquats are appearing, the Japanese plum.
Yeah.
Beautiful flavor, really floral. Again, could be beautiful in a kombucha. So, you know, whilst I just love fermentation.
Clearly. Clearly, yes. What was your science background?
So I'm a freshwater scientist. I studied freshwater ecology.
Does that help with this?
Yeah, it does, because it's really understanding biological systems. And much with fermentation, what's happening in there is there's an ecosystem of, in the case of the SCOBY bacteria and yeast, or in a beer fermentation, it's yeast that reproduce, and so they're a biological organism. So I'm a yeast farmer now, essentially.
That's what you're farming, you're a yeast farmer.
But they need, you know, all the right conditions to have their community operating in the right way to convert sugars that either can come from malt or can come from simple sugars like, you know, orange juice, that then convert through into ethanol and CO2.
So are there kind of principles of a good ecosystem then?
Absolutely, yeah. And in the case of beer, and with kombucha, actually, if you let kombucha go too far, it'll end up going very, very sour. And some people might really like that, but it heads into the full vinegar kind of side of things, because you've got acetobacter in there, which is a vinegar producing culture. So in beer, though, things like the pH of the actual liquid that the malt is mashing in is absolutely critical to the fermentation down the line. So when you're mashing in the grains, if you don't hit a pH of between, you know, 5.1 to 5.4 outer range, everything from there won't flow very well. So you'll have a slow fermentation, and if you have a slow fermentation, the yeast kind of go, oh, we haven't got a good environment, so they start producing off flavors. So all of a sudden you can taste bad flavors in the beer. We haven't had that yet because I'm pretty particular attention yes. to it. But if you and you can in fact stress yeast or certain yeast strains to get these types of compounds produced, some of which may be favorable. So an example would be a lot of the Belgian style beers. You can take some of these yeast strains that produce what are called esters, like banana or clove type characteristics, and if you put less yeast in there than you would normally put to ferment the sugars that are there, the yeast come under stress and they actually produce more of those phenolics. So you can actually enhance the banana character of a particular beer by putting less yeast in there to stress it. So in some ways you can use it to your advantage.
How banana-y does it taste?
Quite banana-y.
Is that right?
Yeah. To the point where, you know, some beers have been called banana beers sort of thing. So
yeah, as you would.
Yeah, and for people who don't like banana, they wouldn't obviously have a banana beer. But for those that do, they love it, you know.
Yeah. So the kombucha, like how far away to having do you think you are to having a product?
Well,
is it a fun experiment at the moment?
I definitely have to mention Safia Patel, our little French girl in there who's really been driving a lot of the kombucha side of things. I sort of threw it to her as an idea. She works on our off license.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I always sort of think when you've got people around you, it's good to challenge them with exciting things to do that's more than just, you know, serving customers. And so in the downtimes, we're playing around with all these sorts of things. And so she's quite into her food and she loves growing stuff. So we've been doing a lot of these little 2-liter kind of mesocosms, if you like. And then,
sorry, what's a mesocosm?
Oh, sorry. So I'm back to my size. It's basically just a small volume jar or a whole series of them where you can take the same stock solution
yep.
and then play around with different variations of flavors to decide off the same base which one do you prefer. And so people will come in and they can have a little try off our tap, and then we'll just get the public feedback on what people like or don't like.
All right.
And then, yeah. So
this is a service the public can provide by drinking your beer and kombucha.
Absolutely, yeah. and in fact, yeah, just recently we, on the beer side of things, we released a little hot box there and we've got a little menu in there, and we're encouraging people who buy the box to give us their preference rating, and we'll collate all that information.
So it's all different types?
Yeah, there's all different types. There's 8 different beers in there, all with different combinations of hops, so that you can sort of decide, oh, I really like this style or that style or this arrangement of hops or whatever. And if there's a clear preference amongst the community, then, you know, that's in the past has helped us. For example, the XPA there was that yellow one. That combination of hops in there was actually the original beer was something different, but we changed the combination in a little pilot batch. Everyone really liked it, so we scaled it up to 2,000 litres.
And that's meant to hang that up, not answer it. Sorry, Jordan. All right, so
let the public decide, basically.
Are you surprised sometimes by what they decide? You think you've created something, people are going to love this, or people you're not sure about it, but people do love it.
Well, yes and no. So, as in, it's pretty obvious that people have a wide preference of what they like or dislike, and it's quite interesting, you know, down at Orca they have a beer club over yep. the winters, and you can go down there and there'll be a whole bunch of people, there'll be 40 odd people in the room, and it'll go through 6 or 7 different beers, and one person will absolutely hate it, and another, you know, give it 2 out of 10, and the other guy will give it 10 out of 10, you know. Yeah. And so you can see straight away that, but every now and again there's a beer that comes along and everybody likes it, you know, and you're like, okay, there's something about that particular beer that hits a mark with everybody, and that's kind of the holy grail, if you like, if you can find something that everybody likes. The alternative, of course, is you provide a broad platform of things that go from either really bitter to not very bitter, or to low flavor like a lager, right through to heavy duty, you know, hops, and you let people choose by trying, you know. Mm. So, You know, and people might come in with preconceived ideas, like, I don't really like Pilsners. And you go, oh, okay, we'll try Pete's Pilsner, which is a different style of Pilsner. And quite a lot of people are going, okay, I actually like Pilsners now. And they switch across.
Named after Pete.
Named after Pete, yeah, Matt's dad.
So oh, yeah, Peter yeah I wondered. Yeah, yeah, right, okay. Yeah, yeah. He's got a beer named after. Now, that's immortality, isn't it?
it is.
This country. So we've got, I'm just looking at the names here. Wakey Jakey, what does that mean in terms of the flavour?
Well, Wakey Jakey, that's named after Jake Gibbs, who, you know, is, well, was or is a bit of a party animal, and he'd often turn up a bit late, so you know he'd be sleeping in, and the flaming pillow there is him still sleeping away.
Oh, that's what that is, the picture. Yeah.
and he'd always sort of turn up just as we were cleaning up, you know. So so and we made another beer after that, a small batch one called Still Sleeping. And
it sounds like a lazy beer. Is it a beer that make you feel lazy?
It is a little bit, because it's got a bit higher ABV. So it'll, you know, you have a couple of those and you'll definitely be sort of sitting on the couch, you know, in a nice zone, I'd say.
Right, the couch, in the couch zone. On the couch. What about RPA? What does that stand
so
that, for?
So that stands for Raglan Pale Ale. So basically our take on the pale ale for Raglan. It's got sort of a little bit of bitterness, a little bit of orange kind of, pithy orange kind of vibe to it, but it's sort of a little bit lower ABV than Wakey Jakey. It's sort of 5.4, so alcohol content, and just a nice bit, a little bit of malt base to it. Just nice pale ale, really.
Okay. And the one-off creations, like, are you? Because I think I saw something on your Facebook.
Yeah,
this is. Going, this is what you're talking about before. People can buy a box and suss them out.
Yeah, so I didn't really answer what we're doing around the sustainability question before, really.
Yeah, should we go to that? Yeah, actually, that was in the back of my head too. We didn't talk about that. Okay, tell us the sustainability things that you're doing.
So, yeah, I was kind of leading towards it a little bit with using a lot of the local produce sort of stuff. So, you know, a lot of the bigger breweries and things, you know, they'll buy in orange, they'll buy apple juice concentrate, for example, you know, and they'll get it from Hawke's Bay and it'll arrive in big drums and then they'll ferment with that. Whereas we'll go and pick the apples off the tree, we'll crush the apples, you know, we'll do all of the manual side of it, but we'll try to do it in a very short distance from, so our smaller batch stuff, if you like, that you can only really get out of the brewery here. We've got our own little bottling machine there as well. So all of those sorts of things there at the moment are going into 500 ml bottles. And there's always been this argument around, you know, what's better, cans or bottles, you know? And it's a very complex question, because cans are...
In terms of sustainability.
Yeah, absolutely. Because cans are light, but aluminium in its virgin state to make is extremely energy intensive. You know, think TY point and all these sort of things, right?
Yeah.
Bottles, less energy intensive to make, but heavier, right?
Yeah.
However, bottles, reusable, not recyclable, yes, but reusable.
Yeah, and most beer bottles aren't, are they, at the moment? They're very thin-walled.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Exactly. But what we're trying to do, and what we're trying to encourage, mainly through our off-license, is for people to come and refill their vessels, what we call them growlers, for want of a better word.
Yeah.
Or you can bring in your own vessel to
You're
fill.
Pointing at my water bottle here.
Sorry, people can't see that, but yeah, it's like one of these things. You can bring in whatever vessel size you like, and it's a little bit cheaper because you're paying per litre, so you're not paying for all the packaging cost, right? Yeah. And you know, Dreamview, I kind of give a little shout out to them, because they got people to think about washing the bottles, right? Which is a mindset thing, where in a community you can do this, right? In a city that gets very difficult to run a model like this, but in a community setting you can do this. You can get people to wash the bottle, think about that bottle itself. You know, I always use the analogy that you don't take a glass out of your cabinet at home, drink a glass of water, and then throw it in the recycle bin because it's glass. Yeah. You wash it and you use it an infinite number of times, unless you drop it. It's good for life because there's a huge amount of embodied energy in that glass. It's silica, it's sand that's gone through a furnace to make it into glass, and that's a huge amount of energy. So why would we take a perfectly good item like a bottle, smash it up into smithereens again, only to turn it into the same thing again, right? It's crazy. So one of the big projects working on at the moment is trying to adapt our keg washer that we built, or that Matt built, actually a really cool little bit of kit, to fit some manifolds to become a bottle washing machine so that when we do these small batch beers, people can bring back the bottles back to us, washed, thanks to DreamView teaching people how to wash bottles. And really, all you got to do is, as soon as you drink the beer, is just rinse it out twice, and that bottle will make our life incredibly easy.
Yeah, don't let it dry up, folks.
Don't let it dry
up. Same goes with the milk.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Make their life easier.
Yeah, my daughter was a driver for DreamView for a little while, and she said some of the bottles are pretty grotty, but I think she was doing stuff over in Hamilton, driving over there. So
yeah, and you know, I think you can incentivize that too, though. Like, as in, if you can save somebody else time, just like the time bank type thing, right? Think about it in terms of people's time as a value.
Yeah.
You know, it makes that whole process easier. You just got to get in the habit of doing that, and when you get in the habit of doing that, you do it automatically. You know, we automatically wash every bottle we kind of pick up these days.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Well, I mean, if DreamView has to really scrub every single bottle, it's going to be more labor intensive. It's going to cost more.
Yes.
So it is coming back to us.
It does.
Yeah.
And so if you run through the full life cycle on something like that, if you've got a refillable vessel, you've got no additional packaging there, so you're reusing the same packaging. You've got no labels. So you look at these bottles here, they've got labels, right? Yeah. Those labels are paper. Paper is made in a pulp and paper factory. It's got colours in it. It's got a glue on the back of it. There's a glue that goes onto the glass, right? So there's all this sort of stuff which is made to look pretty so that when you're in a supermarket, you're competing with all these other people.
Yeah.
You don't have to do any of that in an off-license. You can come and fill your vessel. We put a little reusable tag on your refillable vessel that tells you what the beer is and what its ABV is.
Okay, yeah.
Right? So if you think about that for a second, there's a whole lot of additional waste that you're eliminating by just using that same vessel.
Yes.
You know? And I think that's – so, you know, that's an example of the type of thinking around resources, essentially. So, you know, there's other things in the brewery, like, you know, we use quite a lot of water, and brewing is very energy intensive, but we recover a lot of that water that we use, for example, to cool the beer down from boiling. We've got to cool it so we can ferment it, but that cooling water gets recovered and we use that for additional washing, or we can put that back into our what's called our cold liquor tank to create the cooling water again. So you know, in places, you know, kind of like the same idea of throwing a bottle away, we've made it economically viable to do that. But that's crazy, because we haven't really accounted for the true energy cost of making that bottle in the first place. So anyway, to go back to the canned bottle debate, because I'm sort of running around in circles here doing different things. cans, once they are in aluminium format, they are much more energy efficient to recycle. As in aluminium.
Just because they're lightweight?
No, because the energy process to recycle the aluminium when it's already as aluminium is a lot lower than it is for glass.
I guess it's just a matter of cleaning it and melting it down again.
Yeah. So what fits well for your sustainability principles, whether it's bottles or glass, whether it's cans or glass, is also factored into distribution. So if you're having to distribute bottles to the other side of the world or the other side of New Zealand, that extra weight comes with an energy cost in terms of transport, right? Yeah. If it's cans, it's a lot lighter. And that's why a lot of breweries are switching to cans, because they're doing a lot of distribution. Whereas bottles, if they're reusable and you're in a community environment and you can rewash them, to us, that makes more sense in an energetics context.
It's like the old milk run that my classmates used to do in Form 3 and 4, that whole thing, the olden days.
back to what we used to do in a lot of ways.
And that was eminently sensible. So but also the cans, you've got the plastic six pack.
Yeah.
What do you call it?
PackTech holder.
There we go. PackTech holder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I did a little blog about this because I found this really interesting. I first saw Moa Brewing Company using these, and they got backlash on social media about using plastic, and it kind of angered me a bit, because people see plastic and they automatically think this is bad. But in fact, if you think about this and you understand what that product is, you'll probably change your mind. And if I've actually got a little post on our website about this specific issue and why we chose to use those, because it's made from HDPE plastic, HDPE-2, right?
Meaning?
Which is a recyclable plastic.
Oh, grade 2.
Yep, but it's recyclable. But It's made from existing waste stream plastic. This is very important, right? So that plastic that would otherwise go to a landfill is getting repurposed into a holder that is reusable.
So when you... Okay, that's important.
Yes, it's very important.
I want to go back a step, though. When you choose to make something from plastic, you can choose to use recycled plastic.
Yes.
You can say, we don't need virgin plastic. No. We're more than happy with the recycled stuff.
Yes. So what you're doing is you're diverting existing waste from landfill and repurposing it for a reusable use. And that's very, very important,
you're actually taking it up the waste hierarchy.
You're taking it up the waste hierarchy, which is... And, you know... If anyone's ever listened to Rick at Zero Extreme talk about this, that's the top of the hierarchy, you know, like reusing things and repurposing things, and they're incredibly tough. So as a structure and as a material, it's an amazing material, and so they collect them for us in the recycle bins. We rewash them and we reuse them, and it's very rare that one breaks. And if it does, you can recycle it
anyway,
and it goes back into that, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's really all about how you think about the life cycle process of things. And so the alternative to the Pactic holder is a single-use cardboard sleeve that you see around. You know, you go and buy a box of beers. It's either in a cardboard box. Again, there's colour in the paper. There's the paper itself or the cardboard itself, which has a very relatively high energy. So if you... Back in my sort of regional council days, you know, I'd look at the consents for the pulp and paper at Kinleith, and there's, you know, historically there was not a good discharge from that plant. So you could have a cardboard sleeve that you use once that you, okay, oh, we're recycling cardboard. Yeah, but what's better energetically? Is it to reuse a Pactec holder, or is it to try and spend a whole lot of water and to recycle cardboard again to turn it into cardboard again? It's actually the reuse. You know, it takes a little bit of labour to wash those things and sanitize them for use again.
Yeah.
But you can see the way that you think about every little part of the process. And in the brewing, and we're only talking about, you know, a little bit of packaging around cans, there's elements all over the place that you can look at to improve the way in which you do the footprint.
So I should say that people might be used to the little thing that strangles seagulls.
A
six-pack used to have. So this is, I'm looking at it, it's black, it sits over the top of the six cans, and you can squeeze it above each can, can't you, and it releases the can.
Yeah, they're solid. The cans click onto it. So
Do you have a machine that does that?
No, you just by hand.
The machine's called Bruno.
Yeah, Bruno, Matt, and Saf, But they're actually really, really quick. In fact, they're quicker
people,
than the box.
I remember talking to you before about this. People can actually take them straight back to you guys if they want to be part of that process.
Yeah.
If they're just going past. They probably might be going back anyway. If you're going back to get more beer from the workshop, then just bring the old lit.
The holder. And
the holder. Call it a holder.
Call it a holder, and you'll get like super extra double points if you give it a little wash in case you spilled beer on it, which they actually come back pretty clean unless they go into the recycle bins where they get mixed up with all sorts
of
sugar from RTD cans and all that sort of carry on.
Yeah. But even if people don't, Extreme pulls them out.
Yes, they
do. Puts them in a box for you.
They do. They put them in a wheelie bin for us, and we go and collect them, and then we... You know, we give them a little return for the effort that they've put in collecting them for us. Thanks to you guys at Extreme for doing that for us too. Because it's, yeah, at the start there, I think we haven't been calculating it lately, but I think we were getting around 35-40% return on those Pactec holders initially, which was pretty good when you consider that quite a few people are visiting town and might buy six packs and leave. You know, a lot of the local people are really supporting that initiative to return those or put them in the recycle bin. And some are absolutely returning to us at the brewery, which is awesome.
I guess there's getting people from over the hill to do that could be a little tricky, unless they want to post them back.
Yeah. Well, or
be a level
they,
of dedication. Actually, that wouldn't really work out in the end, would it?
Well, funnily enough, and I don't know about the footprint of this, but I had someone visiting from Holland who posted one back from Holland in the mail, which is, I think that's the current record at the moment is a Holland
it's
return.
Pretty much exactly the opposite side of the world.
That's right.
They probably just enjoyed the fact that they could. Like,
yeah, that's right.
Yeah, really can return it. So. Yeah, now, I just to go back over that, I think I interrupted. There was something else you were going to move on to. Do you remember what that was?
Well, we haven't implemented this yet, but this is something that I reckon is really cool, and I can't claim this idea, but it's a really cool idea. So and I'll quickly cover it because I think it's a really nice idea that's scalable even for other breweries. So there's a little brewery over in Australia called Young Henry's, and what they do is when you ferment beer, you have this big vessel, and what it's doing when you're getting alcohol being made from sugar is the vessel's creating carbon dioxide, CO2, which is a greenhouse gas.
Yes.
So what the guys at Young Henry's have done is, and don't know if the listeners on here know this, but around 60 to 70% of the world's oxygen is made by phytoplankton out in the ocean, not trees. Trees absolutely produce oxygen.
Yes.
But small algae, which reproduce very rapidly, produce heaps of oxygen. And so they use CO2 to make oxygen. So if you have an algal reactor, a vessel with algae in it, and you bubble your fermentation CO2 into it, all you've got to do is provide those algae with light, and those algae will convert that CO2 into oxygen again. So it's sort of like, and as the way the Young Henry's guys describe it, is it's like installing a miniature rainforest on your brewery floor, because a 400-litre, vessel can take 2,000 litres of fermenting beer and turn it into about the equivalent of 2 hectares worth of rainforest oxygen. So it actually punches out. So 2 hectares of rainforest, the amount of oxygen that would produce, is about the same amount that you would get off a single fermentation in the brewery. So what are you doing by doing that? Instead of putting greenhouse gas in the atmosphere, you're putting oxygen back in, right?
Yeah.
Then you harvest the algae. And those algae, so this is the nice part of it. Those algae are themselves an additional useful resource. It doesn't have to be single cell algae. It could be macro algae like seaweed, could be nori. You could be make nori sheets. we could make nori sheets and send them to Ulos, for example.
Right.
The point being that once you've got algae growing, you've then got another resource on your hands that can be used for various things. And what the Young Henry's guys have done, which is super cool, is they're using a particular strain of algae. I believe it's an algal strain called Chlorella vulgaris. You can look this up if you like. It's been used very heavily in the biotech industry as an algae looking for biofuels and these sorts of things because it's very robust.
Okay.
Anyway, they'll harvest that algae and they'll mix it in with their spent grain. And what they've found is that this particular algae has an enzyme or in the stomach of a cow. So if the spent grain that you use from brewing process can be sent to cows, and we do that at Dreamview, right? So our spent grain goes up to Dreamview. Some of it goes to Karina. She makes some bread. She makes a brewer's loaf with some of our spent grain.
Yeah,
it's a very lot of protein in there, and there's like lots of nutrients in it for cattle. But if you mix the algae in with it, when the cows eat it, there's a process that happens in the stomach of the cow. Stomachs, five stomachs.
Are there five? I thought there were four. Many stomachs.
Many stomachs in the cows.
Yeah.
And it will reduce their methane output by around, at the moment they're doing lab trials on this, they reckon somewhere between 15 and 20%. So you treat CO2 in the brewery to create oxygen, and with the same waste product, it can go downstream to another user to help with their climate emissions through ruminant animals, right? Through reducing methane output in cows. So if you follow that through,
have you made a net positive out of the process, do you think?
I think that would, these things are very difficult to calculate because then it depends on how you're running your farm and how you're, what machinery you're using and all that sort of stuff.
Right? Are we anywhere near doing that, I guess?
I can't answer that because I don't have an intimate knowledge of how different farmers might run their operations, but I know that a lot of people are heading in that direction to try and become either negative or and some people can offset that in different ways, but I think that thought process is really important for people to think about where does things end up, and then it's a really interesting challenge for yourself to decide, how can I actually create no waste at all? This is a real interesting thing.
What the natural world has always done, that's how it works. Otherwise, nothing would have happened.
Yeah.
Nothing would have worked on the planet.
I mean, I've got this crazy idea. I don't think it'll work, but I don't know. It's an R&D project. Well, I'd like to try and make a a beer label out of algae that would basically dissolve.
Oh, right. Completely just melt back down, biodegradable. Like, I thought you were ahead anyway when you were making algae regardless, because at the very least that can go in the compost.
Yeah.
You know, it can return to the earth even at that point, but you're taking it a couple of steps further.
Yeah, and I mean, look, there's all sorts of pathways that you can take that resource. You know, we could take the hops and the grains and we could make a little composting facility, and then people could come and take that nutrient and put it in their gardens and grow their own food. You know, that would be a really nice, you know, pick up a beer and a bucket of compost on your way home. Yep. If you want. You know, it's good stuff, you know what I mean? It's rather than buying some synthetic fertilizer or something that's made from, you know, unsustainable urea, which uses, you know, Haber-Bosch process, nitrous oxide gases.
Yeah, all its steps are heavy on the environment.
Phosphate,
yeah.
Rock, you know, it's a mined resource using diesel machinery to dig it up, and you know what I mean, like, but you can create your own, you know. And so that's, I think, how we have to start thinking more about, and these are the sorts of things that, you know, in a like a council setting are very difficult to implement, but in a community setting you've got the capacity to do that.
It's innovation.
It is. It doesn't make economic sense because it's not incentivized very well, but it's the
innovation,
right thing to do.
Innovation doesn't usually only makes economic sense when your economic viability is challenged as a business. Yeah. Then you've got to innovate your way out of trouble.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you keep doing what you're doing because that's what works. And then a council is a different type of beast anyway, which is about rules, I guess.
Yeah. Let's not go there.
Yeah, no, let's not. Yeah. But I mean, like, Extreme Waste is a good example of that, where it's a lot of stuff they do doesn't make sense from a business perspective, but it makes sense from other perspectives.
100%, yeah.
Yeah, and then once they've done it for a while and refined it, then it starts to make sense from a business perspective. And that's what you're talking about. You're trying these things.
Yeah.
And maybe some of them will work and some of them won't work.
Yeah.
Or maybe some of them will take a while to evolve, but...
Well, you know, that algal idea, that is a completely scalable thing. You know, Lion Nathan or DB Breweries that are producing millions and millions of litres of beer, you know, the brewery industry, I believe, and wine industry through fermentation, is responsible for around about 0.9% of the world's CO2 emissions. So it's a pretty, you know, almost a percent, which is a lot. So
are they brewing with a natural process?
Yeah, I mean, the yeast is still metabolizing.
I mean, it's not like soft drinks where they put the CO2 into it to make it bubbly.
Well, they'll do that as well for speed, but in fact, I mean, yeah, again, this is one of the things we do is we'll shut our tanks with the last bit of fermentation to go, and that carbon dioxide, instead of escaping the atmosphere, will get forced back into the beer and carbonated itself, whereas a lot of breweries will just let that go right through and then use a CO2 tank to carbonate it again.
Yeah.
You need a little bit of equipment to do that. It's not very specialized. It's pretty easy to implement, but it's to me, that's just wasted CO2 otherwise, you know.
Yeah.
But if CO2 is cheap, people don't care, you know what I mean? And this is the thing, is it hasn't been valued properly in terms of its impact climate wise.
Yeah.
And it's becoming that now because CO2 has been getting harder to get. So all of a sudden breweries are now investing in infrastructure to recover the CO2.
Why is it harder to get?
Well, I think there was a bit of a global shortage there. I think it was partly related to what was happening overseas with supply chain issues things.
Oh, yeah. Like every industry.
Yeah. But so I'm not sure at the moment what the scenario is, but...
See, this ties into something I've been saying to people a lot in the last year or so, is that there are people working away all around the world in little obscure places like Raglan, doing things that no one knows about and innovating and finding new ways to do things. And we're worried that not enough's been done, and maybe not enough has been done, but there's a lot been done.
Yeah.
And all these ideas are kind of ready. They'll be developed. Like Extreme was, they struggled for a while, but then they've worked everything out how to do it, and now they're consulting for Auckland City, you know, and things like that. So, that stuff's ready and waiting, I think.
It is. And it's funny, you know, I get a real kick from taking a waste product that people think is a waste product and turn it into something really awesome. You know, case in point is our chocolate milk stout. You know, we use the Raglan chocolatier Mike's.
Chocolate milk stout.
Yeah.
That's what you said. Okay, just checking.
Yeah, chocolate milk stout.
So where's that one?
It'll be...
not on their page.
It might be on the small... It's called Chock a Lot. Anyway, he take the cacao husks and we put it in the mash, and it brings this beautiful chocolate flavor into the beer. And that's, you know, that's otherwise can be used as a, you can compost that, or you can actually extract the last bit of beautiful cocoa flavor out of that, put it into a beer, and then compost it. And so, you know, you're using a waste product that would otherwise go. You know, another one is Malcolm, who does the Costa coffee stuff, brought me some of the cherries, the coffee cherries, the outer shell of a coffee bean.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it smells like it's got a beautiful aroma. It's like prunes or raisins. It's just a beautiful, beautiful
really
smell.
Sweet.
Yeah, but it's like this shucky kind of, you know, the outer part of the shell.
I think, though, prunes and raisins, they're not caramelized, but they're going down the, I don't know, I'm not a food expert, but it reminds me of that richness, I think.
Yeah, but you know, so that all of that external part of the husk, which you'd normally throw away, has this beautiful aroma to it, much like the skin of an orange or the skin of a lime.
Yeah.
And I was just, you know, I was talking to Safi the other day on the kombucha thing. I'm like, let's put this pruny coffee cherries, like let's hook up with one of the coffee dudes, get the external cherries, and let's start doing a cherry coffee cherry kombucha and mix that pruny kind of flavor with something that matches well with it, you know. So that's what I mean, like there's a real sense of enjoyment out of taking something like that and producing a really yummy thing that people like, you know. And then compost it, you know.
And then it goes in the compost anyway.
Yeah.
So one question that all this begs is how labor intensive is all this?
Yeah,
because it sounds labor intensive, and that's always an issue for a business, right?
Yeah.
So how's that working out? Are there some things you're going, well, I'm not really going to do that again?
Well, yeah, as Pete sort of says, you just got to sleep less. No, but look,
that doesn't meet the definition of sustainable.
That's true. Actually, I think the main thing is that as long as you're having fun and you're in a good mindset and you enjoy that, to me the whole idea of these things appearing seasonally brings enjoyment for the season ahead, for when those things come out again.
Yeah.
And you don't have them all year round, you know, you just have them when they're there, and then it's just, you just move on to the next thing. So it's always keeping this constant change dynamic. It's not getting stuck in a rut doing the same thing.
Yes.
You know, which,
yeah,
you know, we've got to do our core range beers, and that I still enjoy doing all of those. But that's sort of like, you know, now that we've refined those down, it's like you just do that, you do that. You still need some creativity off the side, you know, and I think that's where this fosters that real cool energy amongst people and getting feedback off the community and all that sort of thing. So
is that part of why you're open as an off license? No, yeah. Can people go there and drink? Or?
You can't. You can come and sample. We're allowed to give 30 ml samples as our legal requirement. But you can't sit there and have a pint of beer. We've got a residential area across the road, and you know, we're not really considering that at this point in time. So, but we are. We're going to take over a little space down below. So Ross the panel beater is moving out. We're going to take over a little space down there, and we're going to turn it into the wild workshop where we're going to do a whole lot of this funky stuff down there and isolate that.
I was wondering when you were going to start taking over all the other buildings around there.
Well, not all of them, just...
Not there. We need the engineers.
Yeah, yeah. And we're not sort of in the view of, you know, total global domination. We firmly want to grow our sort of ideas laterally so that we can provide for the community type environment, rather than, you know, going into far, far areas of New Zealand and compete with everybody else on supermarket shelves. That's not our scene. No.
That's the model that our business culture, our culture has, isn't it? Which is empire building and world domination.
Yeah.
Is where you go.
I don't think it's really working out that well for us, though. And I kind of feel like you've maybe got more resilience as well if you've got, you know, a community type environment and feel where you're able to also deal with these issues of supply chain issues by, you know, having people return your bottles, you know, for example, you know. So I think that sort of idea makes a lot of sense as we progress.
Yeah, yeah. But you're open, like I saw opening hours. What are the opening hours if people want to pop in?
So people can kind of pop down any time, but pretty much Wednesday to Saturday, 1 to 6, are our off license sort of technical opening times.
You get tourists coming through?
Yeah, heaps. Like just last weekend was really quite cool.
It was a busy weekend.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, yeah. Saturday in particular, you know, we had you know, we end up having, there's brewers turn up from around the country, there's beer nuts, it's quite crazy, you know, beer geeks coming from all over the place. It's quite cool, actually, talking to them about. Everybody seems to like hazy beers, though, you know, these hazies that are...
What does that mean? Can't see through it?
Yeah, basically, yeah. It's won't go into it here because it's a full hour discussion on how to make a proper hazy beer, but there is a proper way to make a hazy beer, and if you do it the right way, it can be quite tasty. If you do it the wrong way, it can taste like soapy, hop-burned soup, but...
That just sounds terrible.
Yeah. But if you do it the right way, it can be very, very nice.
Yeah. Of course, we've got a lot of people coming to town on Friday. We're expecting
the rally.
Yeah, right. Some of the Whanga Coast Road and around the mountain all closed this morning because they're doing the reconnaissance. So,
yeah.
I expect a good crossover, a good overlap between rally fans and beer fans.
Quite possibly. Yeah, I mean, those drivers are pretty amazing.
So, how do people find out about you? Like, I mean, I know you. I live here. I know you exist and all that. And I don't even drink beer, so and I'm still really aware that you're here. But for people,
I guess
is it social media that's
mainly something that I'm not on much. So Jake does a lot of our social media posts, and our website, workshopbrewing.co.nz,
which we've got up here on the. Yep. Screen.
So yeah, we've recently added a little Shopify account thing to the back of that. So if people want to buy something, they can actually go through Shopify and order it.
Yeah.
And that would have been useful back when we had sort of the COVID scenario, so that we could deliver. It's interesting. We were sort of driving around in the van, like delivering beer to people during those times there, which was kind of quite fun actually as well.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Kind of like how Dreamview do with the milk, you know, and it's you get to interact with your customers and stuff. And we always enjoy the regulars coming down and having a chat and letting them try new things and that. So, yeah, it feels really good doing things like that.
Yeah. So instead of empire building and world domination, is there a cap on like how big you want to get before it ceases to be fun?
And I think, you know, I've talked about it with Matt as well, as you know, if we can get ourselves a reasonable salary to, you know, and enjoy ourselves without too many staff and too many headaches and too many distribution issues, you know, then we've kind of found the nice place of what Matt used to call the lifestyle brewery, you know? which at the moment is still, you know, we're sort of 6-5 years in, and it's been pretty hard yards. You know, we were both working two jobs, and you know, and Jake as well, you know, any extra spare time. So it's been really challenging on family and all that sort of stuff. But now that I've ditched my old job and I'm doing one thing, I'm getting more time with the kids. I'm able to ride down into work. And
I see you down at soccer with the soccer practice.
Yeah.
So coaching a team, I presume.
And just so much better mentally, you know. So. Yeah. I think that's really important. It helps you to kind of even then, you know, it frees your mind to be able to do more cool things. So
yeah. So at the moment, the cool things are inventing new beers,
and also non-alcoholic and
kombucha. Yeah, I like the sound of the kombucha.
Yeah,
like that.
Sodas, you know, and just like fruit sodas, but not like these kind of, you know, junky ones that have just flavorings in them. Actual legitimate fruit from.
Yeah,
within Raglan, you know what I mean. So
I make drinks with kefir grains.
Oh, nice! Yeah.
And the different fruits you can put in the season, but it's there's kind of an intensity to that you don't get out of a synthetic drink. Like I can't describe it. Just that it like in terms of being refreshing on a summer's day, it's number one. You know that.
It's like a hothouse tomato versus one grown in the garden in terms of flavor punch, you know? You get something at its peak, it's just a whole different deal, especially if you can have it fresh, you know? There's a lot of volatile compounds in there the flavor compounds that actually dissipate away and you lose those. But, you know, scratch the outside edge of a lime and sniff it. It's just like, oh, you want to jump inside the lime, you know?
Isn't that weird? That's where the word zest comes from. That zest.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Zest for life.
someone's asking me about biltong. Why am I being asked about biltong? Does that mean anything?
So that's another fermentation thing. So I do a lot of cured meats.
It's fermented.
Well, biltong, not to the same degree as like fermented salamis and things, but there's a culture, like as in a culture of organisms in a salami, for example, if you do it traditional, where you actually incubate it. it's like an incubated sack of meat, essentially. And if you look into the science of this, people have taken like core samples out of the meat, and you can look at all of the different bacteria and things that are in there. And it's, again, much like a yeast fermentation, there's this battle going on in there between different organisms. And if the conditions are just right, and in the case of meat, it's the salt content. So if you've got, generally it's 25% of the weight in salt. So it's 25 grams per kilo of meat. If you put that correctly,
yeah,
that salt environment enables the good bacteria and yeast to ferment and grow, and not any of the bad botulism-y type ones to grow. So yeah, so it's kind of like Russian roulette, right?
It's not a good marketing terminology.
No, but this is why MPI have very stringent criteria on people who do cured meats. Is if you don't do it properly, you know, so
there's a real potential.
Don't try this at home unless you really know what you're doing, basically.
Yeah. Kefir, home brewing, sourdough bread, it's all good, but yeah, your own biltong is a different story.
Well, but biltong is actually not too bad. So anytime you mince something up, like a salami, then you've got surface area everywhere, then you've got some dramas. But whole muscle blocks, like biltong, is like, you know, is a strip of meat that isn't, it's hard for bacteria to get inside it. So as long as the outside conditions are good, and in the case of biltong, you can have a drying chamber. A lot of people use like a light bulb in there to create the heat, and a fan that has the air circulating, so it dries out. And then you've got all your traditional spices on there, like, you know, coriander, and to make a traditional biltong. But you can do any meat, and you can put whatever spices you want on there. You know, you can do venison that way. And then, you know, you go to the sort of the holy grail of cured meats, which is some stuff that I do as well. I can show you some photos of like a whole leg of a pig, for example, like a really nice farm-reared pig that you can get locally or something. And that'll hang for, you know, up to 2 years. And as it dries, and so you salt that as well, and as it dries, it gets
2 years? Sorry, I just sunk in.
Two years before you can crack it open, which is so. And then you just get this amazing flavor out of the meat right in the middle of it that you just can't get any other way. And it's just the mass of it. So,
you know, our culture's gone through a long period of trying to ban bacteria and eradicate it from food and pasteurize everything and boil and cook everything, and but now it's coming back, isn't it?
Yeah, it is,
and I know there's good reasons for it.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Do you promote the beer as being a health food?
well, it actually has. There's a lot of nutrient in it, you know, and it probably hasn't been marketed very well in that regard, you know. But there's a lot of calories in beer. You know, there's carbohydrates in there. Yeah, there's alcohol in wine, but wine's also has, you know, some health benefits in terms of heart.
That's well known.
It's the same as anything. You know, you have things in excess, it's not good for you. But you know, in the right moderate quantities, you know, it's perfectly enjoyable and good for you. You know, so.
And so the stuff that's out there at the moment, there's beers out there, and we can get that just about anywhere in Raglan at the moment, like that normally sells beer?
Yeah, everywhere except the main pub.
Okay. All right.
Because that's controlled by the big boys. But
oh, I see. Right. Yeah. Right. Even the Raglan Club, you can...
Yeah, well, yeah, we've got some in the Raglan Club. Yep.
Because I thought they had a strong relationship with the brewery as well.
But. Yeah, they do, but there's a small allocation in there that they allow for an independence. And so, yeah, we're in there with some of our bottles. And we've got a keg in there as well, or a couple of kegs in there as well. So, yeah, and I've been really surprised actually at how quickly the beer's been turning over in there. So there's a lot of the younger generation, I guess, are going in there playing darts and playing pool.
Yeah,
which is good because, you know, a lot of the sort of, you know, the older people that were, you know, used to really make the club a home, a lot of the returning servicemen and all that sort of stuff, it's a bit of a changing demographic, and
oh, completely,
you know, I think they need to be thinking about that in terms of maintaining that building, you know, as an important building as well. So I think, you know, things evolve and change, but actually, you know, if you have too much kombucha as well, that's probably not awesome for you either. Like, I think...
Really?
Well,
how much is too much?
Well, I think, you know, as in...
Because you don't drink it like you drink beer. Do people sit down and drink...
I don't know.
A six-pack or a dozen kombucha?
Well, one thing I'll say is the pH of it is very low, so it's very acidic, you know.
Hard on the teeth?
It's probably hard on the teeth. So, you know, again, moderation, you know.
Yeah. But, But it is nice to have sometimes.
Yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
Hey, folks, we've been talking to Bruno David, who's one of the three partners at Workshop Brewing, round on Park Drive, beside the engineers there. And what was that?
Oh, number two. Two Park Drive.
No, number two Park Drive.
Not giving you the
yeah, I know. Just
get out of here.
You can leave in a minute. It's all right. Yeah. Hey, so Bruno, thanks heaps for coming in. Fantastic to talk about something like this and all the positives that are out of it and the innovation that's happening too. I love it.
Thanks, Aaron.